This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When you see continued impunity for serious violations of international human rights law and international humanitarian law, it emboldens the perpetrators.
That's UN Human Rights Spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani on concerns that hundreds of thousands of Sudanese face violence, abuse, and exploitation while fleeing their homes. Details coming up also. South African officials are in Washington amid concerns that close ties with China and Russia are harming relations with the U.S. And 8 farmers were killed in an attack blamed on a militant group in Northeast DRC. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. While warning that Sudan's deteriorating humanitarian situation has reached a breaking point, the United Nations says the leaders of the two warring sides agreed today to peace talks. The news came amid reports of fierce fighting between Sudan's army and the paramilitary RSF, despite the extension of a truce. The AP reports UN envoy Volker Perthes says the talks initially will focus on establishing a stable and reliable ceasefire monitored by the national and international observers. A string of temporary truces over the past week has de-escalated fighting in some areas, while in others, fierce battles continue to drive the civilians from their homes and push the country into a humanitarian crisis. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Sunday he was immediately sending Martin Griffiths, his emergency relief coordinator, to the area. The French news agency AFP reports that more than 500 people have been killed since fighting erupted on April 15th. Volker Perthes is among those who have called for Sudan's warring parties to stop fighting and engage in a genuine dialogue. Perthes has temporarily relocated to Port Sudan due to intensified clashes in Khartoum. Michael Atit reports from Port Sudan.
Volker Perthes, head of the United Nations Integrated Transitional Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, says he remains in constant contact with leaders of the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Speaking to reporters in Port Sudan Sunday, Perthes reiterated his call on both warring parties to stop fighting and allow humanitarian aid agencies to provide services to civilians. He says a genuine dialogue is the only way to resolve any grievances that led to the ongoing fighting. Perthes says, up to this moment, there is no direct talks going on, but we are at the preparation stage for talks between the two parties. Some regional and international countries are engaging the two sides for these talks, and we fully support these efforts. I am personally in a continued direct communication with the two sides. More than 500 civilians and fighters have been killed and over 4,000 others injured since the fighting erupted more than 2 weeks ago. The warring parties have announced a series of ceasefire, but none have held for long. The humanitarian situation in the country continues to deteriorate as more than two-thirds of hospitals in areas of active fighting have been shut down due to attacks and lack of medical supplies, staff, water and electricity. Perthes insists any ceasefire needs to be put into practice by both sides. Perthes says, we need to step in and help the situation out. Citizens need to come out of their homes and hospitals are in need of medical supplies. In order to realize all this, Perthes says, we need a true and effective ceasefire, not only making the announcement. Most humanitarian aid agencies and organizations have suspended their operations in Khartoum and evacuated their staff outside of Sudan. Perthes says he and other diplomatic missions have relocated temporarily to Port Sudan in hopes that some semblance of normalcy returns to the capital. He says most of them have left the country temporarily, and I insist on the word temporarily, because we would like to go back to Khartoum when the security situation allows us to do so. The Rapid Support Forces announced Sunday evening yet another 72-hour ceasefire in response to the regional and international calls. The Civil Aviation Authority in Sudan has issued a notice to Air Missions, NOTAM, that extends the closure of Sudan airspace to all air traffic until May 13, with exception to humanitarian aid flights and evacuation flights for foreign nationals. These flights require permit from the competent authorities and the approval of the Sudan Armed Forces. Michael Atit for VOA News, Port Sudan.
The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights reports hundreds of thousands of Sudanese civilians are facing violence, abuse and exploitation while fleeing their homes in search of safety. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since fighting broke out between the Sudanese Armed Forces and paramilitary Rapid Support Forces 2 weeks ago, United Nations officials say there has been a dramatic deterioration in the human rights situation in the country. And this, they say, has increased the fear, deprivation, and trauma of people who are seeing their hopes for a democratic society slip away as competing forces fight for power. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says thousands of people trapped in residential areas of intense fighting are subject to mistreatment and abuse while fleeing from airstrikes and shelling.
People also continue to be forced from their homes by the RSF and suffer looting, extortion, acute shortages of food, water, electricity, fuel, and limited access to health care and cash due to the closure of banks, as well as limited communications.
Fighting broke out on April 15th between the Sudan Armed Forces, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, commanded by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, or Hamidi. The two generals led a military government that ousted a civilian military transitional administration in 2021, but argued over talks to create a new civilian government. Shamdasani notes fierce fighting continues in densely populated areas of Khartoum, Bari, Omdurman, and towns in Darfur and North Kordofan, despite ceasefire agreements between the warring parties. She says reports of prison breaks and of inmates being released or escaping is alarming, given the long history of impunity in the country. She adds UN Rights Chief Volker Turk thinks impunity is at the root of a lot of what is happening today.
When you see continued impunity for serious violations of international human rights law and international humanitarian law, it emboldens the perpetrators. And we are very concerned that prison releases or escapes have also led to potential war criminals having been released. This is of deep concern.
Shamdasani says concern is rising that the conflict will trigger intercommunal violence in West Darfur. She notes clashes in El Janina in West Darfur reportedly have killed about 100 people since April 24th. She warns the environment of impunity and lawlessness is creating a situation that is ripe for further violence. She says it is a dangerous breeding ground for opportunistic criminal violence as well as for long-standing ethnic tensions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today is International Workers' Day, and South Africa commemorated the occasion amid labor disruptions caused by power cuts, economic decline, and retrenchments. Workers gathered in rallies across the country, with some highlighting challenges faced by the working class. South Africa's unemployment rate stands at 32.7%, while the country has been cited by the Financial Action Task Force, a global anti-money laundering watchdog. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Across different gatherings throughout the country, workers expressed their anger against growing corruption, rising unemployment, low wages, and the undermining of their rights in many workplaces. Speaking at the main gathering in the Free State province, the Congress of the South African Trade Union President Zinyi Swalosi said urgent action is required to protect the workers' rights.
Every week, we lose a mine worker in an accident. We lose a police officer in the line of duty. Every day, comrades, we women workers, we are subjected to sexual harassment and gender-based violence. We have seen workers being threatened with retrenchments and their salaries being slashed.
In his speech delivered at the commemoration held in Durban, Zwelinze Mavhavhi, Secretary General of the South African Federation of Trade Unions, said the government is to blame for most of the challenges faced by the workers.
We hold position number one in the whole world when it comes to youth unemployment. 30 million South Africans live below the upper bound poverty line, and whereas only 1% of the population owns 45% of the wealth.
However, in his May Day message of support delivered at the Free State Gathering, President Cyril Ramaphosa said the government needs everyone's contribution in resolving the current challenges.
We want to say that, yes, issues such as poverty, unemployment, inequality are challenges that can only be effectively addressed if we continue working together, if we continue holding hands to ensure that the ideals set out in the National Democratic Revolution are indeed achieved.
With South Africa currently experiencing load shedding of up to 6 hours a day, many jobs are being lost, especially in the informal sector. Experts warn if the power cuts increase to 8 hours a day, nearly a million jobs will be lost. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Thuso Khumalo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. 8 farmers were killed yesterday in an attack blamed on a militant group targeting 3 villages in northeast DRC, according to a local official. Abudango Kivya told the French news agency AFP from the district of Jugu in Ituri province that members of CODECO, or Cooperative for the Development of the Congo, attacked the villages of Duvri, Njalo, and Bengi. CODECO says it is protecting the Lindu community from another ethnic group, the Hema, as well as the DRC army. The Hema are defended by the Zaire militia, while the province is also targeted by the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, linked to the Islamic State jihadist group. Eastern Congo is plagued by dozens of armed groups, many of which are legacy of regional wars that flared in the 1990s and 2000s. AFP says Ituri province is one of the violence hotspots, where attacks claiming dozens of lives are routine. The last attack, blamed on CODECO, killed more than 40 people on April 14th in villages near the provincial capital of Bunia. Cameroon journalists say they remain fearful more than 3 months after the abduction and killings of investigative journalist Martinez Zogo and radio presenter Jean-Jacques Olabibi. The situation underscores the challenges that media face as the world marks Press Freedom Day on Wednesday. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the capital Yaoundé.
This music, called Justice for Martinez Zogo, blasted through speakers at Amplitude FM Radio in Yaoundé on Friday. Among the several dozen civilians who stopped in front of an enlarged photograph of slain journalist Zogo and Olabibi to pay homage was Dieudonné Kouché. Kouché says he noticed that workers are worried and very scared of the unknown. He says he feels for the workers because Cameroon is a country where officials and powerful business executives can decide one morning to abduct and kill a reporter. He says charges of torture and complicity in torture for the over 20 people arrested in connection with Zogo's killing are not convincing. Kouché said the culprits should have faced more serious charges. Zogo was a radio host at Amplitude FM. The U.S.-based Committee to Protect Journalists reports that Zogu had been investigating allegations of corruption involving senior officials in the Central African state. His mutilated body was found on January 22 in Yaoundé, 5 days after he was abducted. Cameroonian President Paul Biya ordered an investigation into Zogu's killing after a national and an international outcry. Jean-Pierre Amugu Belinga, a prominent business leader with holdings in banking, finance, insurance and property, as well as the L'Anecdote company, which owns a daily newspaper and several pro-government TV and radio stations, was arrested. Zogu, in one of his programs, said many senior officials, including Amugu, wanted to kill him, but pledged to continue digging deep into corruption, which he said involved Belinga and many government ministers. The police also arrested a former chief presidential security guard, senior police officers, and a police chief in connection with the killing. Charlie Chuemo, editor-in-chief of Amplitude FM, says reporters have been receiving threats and the momentum to report graft is fading. He says since Zogu was killed, some Amplitude FM journalists are scared of reporting corruption and social ills, even though the media organ is more than ever before determined to denounce corruption. Chuemo says Amplitude FM reporters are particularly scared because they receive anonymous phone calls from suspected government officials and supporters and business partners of Belinga. He says the callers threaten to kill journalists who continue to report that the business mogul may have masterminded Zogu's killing. A court in Yaoundé has on two occasions denied bail for Belinga. Charles Chuangang, who leads Belinga's legal defense, says it is not proper for his client to be in jail while other suspects are free. He spoke to VOA by telephone from Douala, Cameroon's economic hub, on Friday. He says he is surprised that Amugu was arrested and that some government ministers who are prime suspects still have their freedom. Chuangang says keeping Belinga detained does not answer the question as to who killed Zogu, because he is very sure that the journalist killers are high-profile government officials accusing Belinga falsely. The government is yet to respond to Chungang's allegations that senior government officials planned Zogu's killing. The government, however, says it will investigate and punish all killers according to Cameroonian law. Another radio presenter, Jean-Jacques Olabebe, was found dead outside his home in the capital on February 2nd, allegedly gunned down by unknown assailants. The government has not commented on his killing. Cameroonian journalists say the two deaths scared them and that they have reported threats to the police. The police told VOA that it had received complaints from reporters and that it is its duty to protect every civilian. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Senior South African government officials have been in Washington since Friday to meet with counterparts from the Biden administration. The visits happening amid concerns from President Cyril Ramaphosa that South Africa's close ties with China and Russia are harming its economic and political relations with America. Darren Taylor reports.
The South African delegation is led by Ramaphosa's security advisor, Sydney Mufamadi, a top African National Congress ANC member. The team wants assurances that Washington will not eject South Africa from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. This law has given some African countries duty and quota-free access to U.S. markets for products since 2000. International relations expert Peter Fabricius says South Africa exported goods worth 60 billion rands, almost $3.5 billion, to the U.S. under AGOA in 2022.
It's quite beneficial, particularly for like auto manufacturers. We export quite a few autos there. Also processed food, you know, fruit and stock reduces, and other things. And it's also symbolic in a way, because it's a kind of a confidence-building thing for other traders and investors and so on to know that we have that relationship.
But he says growing numbers of influential American politicians are unhappy with the ANC government. They think Pretoria's moving away from being non-aligned in the war in Ukraine to being a firm ally of President Vladimir Putin. Examples include South Africa's recent joint military exercises with China and Russia, while declining to participate in one led by the US, a move Professor Chris Isike of the University of Pretoria calls a strategic mistake.
South Africa needs to take a critical look at these from a national interest point of view, from economic interest point of view, where its bread is being buttered. Currently, its bread is better buttered by trade relations with the United States, which is far, far higher in volumes than whatever it has with Russia.
Fabricius says members of the U.S. Congress are also upset that the South African government made it clear it won't arrest Putin if he visits the country for a summit in August. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, has issued a war crimes warrant against the Russian leader. As an ICC member, South Africa is obliged to take him into custody if he arrives in the country.
It's mainly the Republicans who are unhappy with South Africa's business. I mean, look, the administration, Democrat, also not so happy, but, you know, Biden tends to be quite sympathetic. He had Ramaphosa to visit in September on a state visit, which was quite a big
Isike doesn't think Washington will risk driving a key African country further into the China-Russia camp by cutting trade ties with it. He also points out the ANC is currently doing something that no Western power is able to do, meeting with Russian government officials in Moscow.
There is an advantage South Africa has and which may benefit the United States in terms of South Africa's ability to be able to talk to Russia to help to resolve the conflict in line with its stated foreign policy goal and its commitment to peaceful resolution of conflict. In essence, South Africa does have linkages to Ukraine and Russia, and I think that it presents an opportunity to help the United States to have a connection, however indirect that may be, to help to resolve this conflict.
Ramaphosa's spokesperson, Vincent Magwenya, told VOA the president hasn't received any indication that the U.S. government intends to impose punitive measures against South Africa for anything. But Fabricius says Ramaphosa wouldn't send a special delegation to Washington if he wasn't worried about something that could threaten future American-South African relations. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Nigerian police say they arrested 8 separatists suspected of killing 6 people last month in the country's troubled southeast. The suspects have all confessed to be members of the dreadful IPOBESN syndicate terrorizing the good people of Imo State and had a hand in the recent killing of 4 police officers and 2 civilians, according to state police statement. IPOB is the Indigenous People of Biafra movement, which wants a separate state for the Igbo people in southeast Nigeria, while the ESN is its armed wing, the Eastern Security Network. AFP reports that attack blamed on IPOB have left dozens of police officers dead in the last 2 years in southeastern Nigeria, just one of several security crises confronting President-elect Bola Ahmed Tinubu. Local government offices and electoral agency buildings have also been targeted. IPOB denies any responsibility. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.